All right, welcome to the Free Stretch, brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. Here on JoeBucksFan.com, I am Bobby Fenton. 2 weeks until training camp edition of the show today, mid-July edition. I guess this is the first edition of the show in July as well, since I have not talked to you in a couple of weeks after going out of town last week. I am excited to be back, most of all because I know how close it is now. We can all just taste it, training camp. I'm recording this on Friday morning, so 2 weeks away from today, we'll be out there, and you know there's always going to be people out there from Joe Bucks Fan. I'm going to attend a few practices. Of course, the Joes will always be there and everything else. And maybe, and I'm just batting this around like I literally just thought of this like 5 seconds ago. Maybe I'll even try and record a show on my phone while I'm at camp. And like people who are there who may happen to listen to the show can come up to me and we can talk to them. I don't know how that would work yet. I literally just thought of this, like I said. Just something I'm batting around. You know, I don't need to be affiliated with one of the radio stations. I don't need to be anything. I can just sit there anywhere in those covered bleachers. That's the key. And do it. So maybe we'll do something like that. I'm not sure yet. Throwing it out there. But thank you for joining us here on this mid-July edition. The Free Stretch brought to you by Bill Curry Ford. As always, where they have always the nationwide lifetime warranty going. That is on everything they have there. New and pre-owned vehicles. And with that, you get unlimited years, you get unlimited miles, you get 10 years, a decade of roadside assistance. I don't think I've ever had a car for 10 years, so that should cover most of it, right? And then, of course, you get 1 year complimentary service where you can bring it in anytime, get the oil changed, all that stuff, right there at Bill Curry Ford, which is located physically a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. It's just on the east side of the road, just north of that Hillsboro overpass. And if you want to see all the details and all the inventory, you can go to the website before you make a trip down there. It's easy, BillCurryFord.com. That's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. Sean Sullivan is the GM, a good friend of mine. And if you mention me, if you mention the Free Stretch, if you mention Joe Bucks Fan, you'll get the Joe Bucks Fan discount on top of the already transparent online pricing and the warranty. All of it, again, at Bill Curry Ford. Proudly serving this community for going on almost 60 years now. Thanks to them, as always. So, I went to California last week. I'd never been to Southern California before. That's why I didn't do a show, and I apologize for that, because normally I try and pride myself on doing a show every week, no matter what. And I got back on Thursday night last week, and then Friday was really busy with the kids trying to get stuff back to normal and all that, and I just ended up not getting a show done. So my apologies, but you know, while I was out there, and I got some people on Twitter asking me about it, and I had a few friends texting me about it, we had the earthquake happen, and I was there, like in LA. I was actually at the airport getting ready to fly home at LAX, when the first of the two earthquakes that were reported happened. And I was really disappointed, to be honest with you, because I had no idea anything had happened, felt nothing. And I'm standing there in the airport. In fact, what I was doing, I can tell you exactly what I was doing. I was standing at one of the airport bars. We had already checked in, already gone through security. And I was standing at one of the bars watching the Nadal match against, I think he was playing against, it was Kyrgios. It was Kyrgios Nadal, like the second round of Wimbledon. And me and my son are standing there just behind the people that are eating and watching the match. So, you know, my whole life, I've been one of those guys. I'm an excitement guy, okay? Even things that maybe aren't things you're supposed to get excited about, if they're a break from the ordinary, a break from the mundane, I get excited about them. Hurricanes are a good example. I mean, hurricanes aren't a good thing. We don't want a hurricane to hit us, right? But when I see Paul Delgado or Steve Jervy or Dennis Phillips or one of those guys say, hey, little disturbance out there in the Eastern Atlantic, we're keeping an eye on it. Every time I kind of perk up, I go, you know, I just naturally, I can't deny it, okay? I know it's probably not a good thing. I know I probably shouldn't be proud of it, but I get a little excited. And then when it starts to develop and it starts to look like it may be an influence on Florida, I'm thinking, okay, just because, I mean, maybe my life is that boring. Maybe I just need more action in my life, but I get excited. So, obviously been through those. Been through some other things, natural disaster-wise. Nothing that really affected my life ever, fortunately, you know, in the long run, but obviously a hurricane is something that, or excuse me, an earthquake is something that living here and I'm born and raised here, I'd never have the opportunity. And I always thought to myself, man, you know, the odds are like 1,000,000 to 1, right? But wouldn't it be cool to like go out to LA and have a hurricane happen? I keep saying hurricane. Have an earthquake happen while you're there. Like, think about that. Like, what are the odds? Because like my whole life I've been to California twice, once to the Northern California, San Francisco area, and then this past week was the Southern California, LA, San Diego trip. So that's a total of, I think, maybe 8 days of my life I've ever spent in California. I'm 39. You know, what are the odds on one of those 8 days there'd be an earthquake? And when I went out on this trip, I wasn't expecting anything. So then we're leaving. I mean, we're literally like 45 minutes from leaving. We're at the airport waiting, and an earthquake happens. And the lady sitting at the bar in front of me started looking around, and like, she's like, "What was that? I feel dizzy. What's going on?" Like, she was like looking around, and I'm like, "What is this chick? This chick is weird. Like, what's going on?" And the guy behind the bar, who was obviously a citizen of Southern California, he starts nodding. He's like, yep, we're having an earthquake. And I'm just looking at my son, and I'm looking back to him. I'm like, what? And he's like, oh, yeah, I feel it now. He's like, I feel a little dizzy. Not too bad. He's like, this isn't too big of one, I don't think. And I'm looking at these people like they've got three heads. I'm like, I'm feeling nothing. Like, I was standing there, and I literally did not. If you hadn't told me anything, and I was actually on my phone looking at Twitter, people started tweeting about it, and I'm reading that. And if none of those things had happened, I mean, I would have had no idea. So all that time, all those long odds, I mean, got to be over 1,000,000 to 1 that I'd be out there when a hurricane happens. Then it happens while I'm there, and I have no idea. Like, just completely. And my wife was, like, down the way with my daughter. They had gone to the bathroom and to get a drink of water or something. She comes walking back. I'm like, hey, just had an earthquake. You know, I was, like, excited to tell her. And she's like, what? Just like I was. And I'm like, yeah. And nobody. I mean, we're the Florida people. We're the ones that should, if anything, be overly sensitive to it. Like, we notice something that maybe if you're in Southern California long term, you're used to feeling the ground move a little bit. You don't think much of it. You'd think we'd be the ones that would be, oh my God, that was an earthquake. No. I mean, literally nothing at all. And then, of course, a couple days later, after we'd already returned home, they had another one. I don't think anybody sustained any major damage, but a lot of people were putting stuff on Twitter with their pools sloshing back and forth and things like that, and stuff falling off of grocery store shelves and all that. So anyway, can't call that the highlight of my trip because obviously I didn't have any idea it was happening at the time, but it was a great trip. Southern California is a cool place. We did fly over the Rams Stadium, which is near the airport, the new Rams Stadium that's being built, so that looks like it's going to be pretty cool. I want to thank them once again for having construction delays on that stadium, allowing Tampa to host the Super Bowl after next season that was supposed to be LA's, but they bumped LA back to two seasons from now, which means next season we get to host it, all because that stadium isn't going to be ready in time, and we'll always be grateful for that. Of course, South Florida is going to have the Super Bowl this year. We did go to the Coliseum. I wanted to sneak in, but I had a group, you know, it wasn't just me. I could sneak in anywhere, but took some pictures around the outside of the Coliseum and all that, and it was a pretty cool place. The Bucks will play there this year against the Rams. Also saw the Rose Bowl and all that, and went to a Dodger game, and ended up waiting in the will call line for 45 minutes to pick up my printed tickets, which I was then told I could have done on my phone all along. And I know that you can do that. I already knew that. I wanted printed tickets. So when I got to the front of the line and they refused, not only told me, oh, use your phone, I said, yeah, I know, I can use my phone. I want, you know, the souvenir. I like to hold on to my ticket stuff. They said, oh, we can't do that. And I said, well, the person I bought them from on the phone through the Dodgers, it wasn't like I bought them from a scalper, said, if you want real tickets, just wait in line at will call and they'll print them for you. I waited 45 minutes, missed the first 2.5 innings of the game. And then they tell me, oh, just scan your phone. Like, I didn't already know that. Like, I know I'm not Mr. Technology, but I mean, I know you can do that on your phone, right? And I know the Bucks have done that, too. The Bucks have it on their phone. You can print them out on an 8.5x11 sheet of paper if you want, but you can do it on your phone. The season tickets, you know, the season tickets now, and I haven't had season tickets since they've done this, but they're on a card, right? You just have a card. They scan the card every game, and that's it. And so you have one card for the whole season. And again, I'm not against technology. Like, that's fine as an option, but I'm a firm believer, and you want to call me outdated, you want to say, you know, old man yells at cloud, whatever, fine. you should have the option, everybody should have the option to have a paper ticket that when you go in there, they scan it or they tear it or whatever, and you have that ticket stub. I have a shoebox in my garage right now full of ticket stubs all the way going back to like 1983 when I started attending my first Bandits games and Bucks games here in Tampa. And I've got, I mean, so many stubs. I mean, every Buck game I ever attended as a kid, I can look it up. I can go back in the shoebox and say, was I at that game? Okay, let me check. Because I'll have the ticket stub. I always saved it. Even when I was a little young kid, my mom and dad saved it for me, and I saved it when I was old enough to understand. And I've got them all. And now I go to these games, and they want me to hold my phone out and scan. I want the damn ticket, okay? I just went to Dodger Stadium for the first time. I don't have a ticket now. I never will. And yeah, I remember the trip, but I want to go through that shoebox, especially my son who's only 7. I want him to go through the shoebox and find that one day when he's just not even thinking about it. And all of a sudden he just comes across that ticket stub and the memories come rushing back. And those of you all out there who are season ticket holders, I know we've got a few who listen. I used to be a season ticket holder for over 10 years. And one of the best days of the year, I mean, what a great day it was that day you'd get home and there'd be a little manila envelope just leaning up against your door. Usually wouldn't fit in the mailbox, so they'd lean it up against my front door. And you knew. You know, it was around this time of year. It was close to right now. It might have already happened. And of course, now it's just the card. But it'd be sitting there on the door, and it was that booklet of those 10 crispy, glossy, shiny Buck season tickets for the dawn of a new season. And I would open that thing up. The first thing I did when I got home, I'd grab the envelope, open it up, flick through that little booklet, the little perforated edges of each ticket you could tear off game by game, the smell of the new fresh ink. A couple years they did like the leathery football pebbling, you know, on the tickets and on the booklet. It was a nice big booklet. I used to love that, you know. Like now I'd probably, here's your credit card, here's your swiper. And again, if you want to use that, I mean, I'm not anti-technology. Like that should be an option. In fact, you know, I'm always conscious of waste, and you know, we don't want to waste a ton of paper printing out a million things we don't need. But for the people like me, you know, let me have a ticket stub. At least just if I go to the will call window and I say, hey, I know this is on my phone, but can you just print this real quick? Just give me an actual ticket. Just to humor me. I know they say, though, they took the machines out. Have one machine left up, just one somewhere. Because I know they print tickets. I saw people with tickets. It's not like I'm the only one. So do that. The Padres gave me paper tickets when I went to the window and bought tickets. And that was probably my problem. I should have bought them at the window instead of buying them on the phone and then picking them up. Because I thought, dummy, me, I thought I could just go get them printed after the fact, but you can't. So anyway, that pissed me off. Although Dodger Stadium was awesome, had a great time. The Padres Stadium was cool too, although it was a sold-out game. And this is classic Tampa Bay sports fan take, but the sold-out game, it was really uncomfortable. It was too many people. It was hard. Like, I like to go sit down and spread out a little bit and watch the game. And you couldn't even move in that damn stadium the Padres have. It's a nice stadium, but it's actually not built for big crowds. So when they sell it out, you can barely move in the concourses. And there's no common area to, like, watch the game. There's a little bit, but everywhere you turn, just hundreds of people, it annoyed me. Give me a Rays game with about 15,000 any day where I can go down that first base line and just find a spot with a couple rows to either side of me where I can, you know, put an arm around each seat to my left and right, put my legs up, you know, not have to worry about blocking anybody's view. I'll take that any day, baby. We got it made. Although Petco Park is beautiful. It really is. And so is Dodger Stadium. Dodger Stadium, to me, you know, that's one of the icons of baseball. It's not as old as Fenway and Wrigley and the old Yankee Stadium, but it's like the fourth oldest or third oldest now. And it's got that perfect, like, 60s, I don't want to call it kitsch, but it's got a real L.A. vibe. The Ravine is cool. It's right near downtown. We had a place, an Airbnb, right down the street so we could actually walk to the game. Didn't have to fight any traffic. I thought it was awesome. So had a great trip out there. And, again, that's the reason I didn't have the show last week. So what happened while I was gone? Oh, well, first of all, if you want to email me, and I have a couple emails and tweets I will read, always love hearing from you guys. The email address is bobbygameday@yahoo.com. That's BOBBYGAMEDAY @yahoo.com. On Twitter, you can find me at bobbygameday. What happened while I was gone? Not a lot with the Bucks. Obviously, this is the dead time. Right on the cusp of starting training camp. There's no OTAs. There's no anything. Everybody's getting ready. Well, what did happen, and this is not even while I was gone. This happened just a couple days ago. Ryan Smith Buccaneer cornerback suspended for the first four games of the season. And so, you know, then everybody hears this, and it's like the fifth year in a row, I think, or the fourth year in a row or something like that, where the Bucs have had a player suspended. Quan Alexander had it happen. Of course, we had Jameis Winston last year. They've had a couple of other ones. So Ryan Smith, I mean, how much of a big deal is this? Well, when you look at the Bucs' secondary depth chart, Ryan Smith was probably going to be fighting for a spot to begin with. And so I don't think, as far as X's and O's go, wins and losses go, this is like a major blow or anything. It's, you know, only the first four games. And second of all, he may have been cut, and he may still be cut anyway. If they do cut him, I think they can save a couple of million in cap space. And again, you've got Carlton Davis, you got Hargraves, your starters at corner. Sean Murphy, Bunting, and Jamel Dean are the backups as of right now. Those are both guys we just drafted. And the Buccaneers did know about the possibility of a Ryan Smith suspension as far back as March, it's being reported. I saw that on Greg Allman's Twitter feed. So that means they knew about this during the draft, and that could also explain why they went nuts at corner and just kept drafting corners. Although, again, that wouldn't be enough of a reason on its own to do that. They needed help at corner anyway. Ryan Smith now, you know, looked like he was going to probably be fighting for that fifth corner spot because they didn't draft Jamel Dean and Sean Murphy Bunting for no reason. So, and he's a good special teams guy, by the way. Smith, you know, he's done well there. As far as his time at corner, you know, I've heard people going back and forth on Twitter, oh, he sucks, who cares, this, that, and the other. He hasn't been great. Relative to the Bucs, though, he's been better than our average guy. Like, he's been above the mean average corner for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That's because our corners suck and our defense has been terrible. And so the scale slides way down. And on that scale, yeah, Smith's been okay. He's been one of the not worst guys in the secondary. And so, you know, I can't get all worked up about it or anything like that. Of course, he doesn't have to get paid. Nothing really happens while he's suspended, so they don't have to cut him now. They can do it when he's eligible to come off suspension if the situation at that time calls for it. But again, you can wait and see, you know, what if two guys get hurt in the 4 weeks that he's suspended and you need him? Then he comes back, then you can take him. Or if you're doing well, what if Sean Murphy Bunting's a stud? What if Jamel Dean's a stud or whoever? You know, then okay, we'll let you go. That $2 million in cap space is kind of a lot for a guy who's decent on special teams. But what really stood out just in reading about this story, and it's kind of a testament to where the Bucs are right now, and Greg Allman pointed this out, Ryan Smith's 25. 25, okay? He's the oldest cornerback we have. And if you count safeties and you go to all 16 defensive backs currently on the roster, he's only the second oldest. I mean, he's the second oldest at age 25. So that's good and bad. It's good because our secondary has been really bad. So at least you say, oh, it's a bunch of young guys. They're going to either improve or new people will come. You know, this isn't like a veteran secondary unit that's expected to be good that is instead terrible. It's a young unit. It's bad because, yeah, it's a young unit. It's a lot of unproven guys, and it's bad because if you look ahead to just this one single year, yeah, I'm not saying you have to be old to be good at corner, but, you know, we got a lot of young, unproven guys that we're just hoping are good, and that goes back to the whole thing that I've been saying on every show this offseason about, you know, what are the Bucs counting on this year to be better than last year? A lot of it's either the same people just to be better or unproven people that we hope are better and don't have no idea, no reason to believe for sure that they will be. Now, all that remains to be seen. But either way, the big four, as we'll call it, out on the corners, and this isn't talking about safeties, is going to be Davis and Hargraves and, of course, Dean and Murphy Bunting, who none of us has seen play at the NFL level yet. So there's that. Meanwhile, you've also got a little bit of league news, and I didn't think this was major news. Pro Football Talk did an article on it, though, and this was regarding officiating. It was posted yesterday. They are going to scrap the full-time officials program. Kevin Seifert of ESPN.com reporting the league has shelved full-time officiating as part of ongoing labor discussions with the NFL Referees Association. This means the NFL officials, and I'm quoting here the article on PFT, will revert to being part-time employees, which presumably stinks for those NFL officials who had become full-time employees and in turn given up other part-time gigs. It goes on, it's undoubtedly a bargaining tactic by the NFL, which showed in 2012 that it's more than willing to compromise the quality of officiating by locking out the officials and hiring replacements. Of course, after that didn't go very well those first few weeks, that got scrapped. Anyway, the current labor deal between the NFL and its officials runs through the end of this coming season, March 2020. And so we'll see what they try and do, if they try to get cheap on these guys or whatever. I'll say this much, though. I know that's been a big thing that people clamor for. Oh, the quality officiating so poor. We need to have full-time officials. I have never thought that seemed like a good idea. Football is a once-a-week sport. It's not baseball. It's not even hockey or basketball, where they play 82 games and they're, you know, for 6 months of the year. It's a nightly grind. It's once a week. What are you going to do for 9 months of the year when you're a full-time official? I mean, my God, I understand, yeah, okay, training camp, they go around, they work, you know, some of the scrimmages, they have seminars, blah, blah. Okay, listen, you can do all it. It just seems like really, 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 really strong overkill for a job that you actually do the thing that your job is for 16 days of the year to make that into a full-time job. And people say, well, Bobby, look no further than just two games ago, the NFC Championship game, you know, the Rams-Saints, that whole thing. Hey, I'm not saying that the officiating's great. I don't think it's as bad as people make it out to be. I think that we make too much of poor officiating because we have more eyes on things now. I think if you go back and watch a game from 1989, you'll see all kinds of missed calls and things like that. But instead of it being a huge controversy on Twitter and sports talk radio, even the announcers don't even acknowledge it. They just go on to the next play. I see that all the time when I watch old games on NFL Network or something like that. And everybody just shrugs and says, oh, well, that's the way it goes, and they move on. That's the difference now. It's not that officiating has gotten worse. It's probably gotten better, if nothing else. And I maintain that a little bit of common sense could fix the current problems. We don't need better officials. We need more checks on the officials in the form of the common sense couch review guy, and they've even tried this in the AAF or whatever they called it. And I said it even before that. Like, when you're watching a game at home and you know a call was missed and you're just sitting on your couch watching the TV, you know, generic replays they show you. You don't have some war room set up with 15 monitors. You just have your TV and you have NBC Sunday Night Football crew. You got Al Michaels and Chris Collinsworth. You know, we can see on those broadcasts within 15 seconds if a call is wrong or not. And we go, oh, yep, that should have been that. Why can't they actually do that for real? Like, have a guy at the stadium watching the game. And so, yep, nope, that was pass interference. That Rams-Saints game, nope, that was PI. Call that. Just buzz down and say, hey, PI. That's it. Like, that's it. You don't have to stop the game. You don't have to have the referee go do the peep show, you know, with his the very tawdry-looking thing where he puts his head under the hood. You don't have to do any of that stuff. Like, you just need a common-sense couch ref. And it could be an actual referee, just like an extra referee, only he's watching the television broadcast, and you can give him even more. Like I said, give him three monitors, four monitors, make them all 65 inches plus, make them all HD or 4K, whatever the hell it is. I don't get what the problem is. But you don't need, I mean, Pete Morelli, who I always love, like, all the different referees and seeing what their actual occupations are. Pete Morelli just retired last year. He was a high school principal. How great was that? Like, he's a principal during the day. Monday, and on Friday, he gets on a plane and flies somewhere, and all the kids that go to his high school can turn the TV on Sunday. No, there's Principal Pete. He's working the Vikings-Bills game, you know, whatever it is. And he does the game, and he flies home, and he goes back to work on Monday. It shouldn't be that big of a deal. Like, you don't need full-time officials. So I am fine. I mean, I know the NFL's not doing it for that reason. They're doing it because it's a negotiating tactic, but I really never thought you needed full-time officials. You can beef up their training a little bit, but football's really hard to officiate. There's going to be mistakes, and those mistakes are more easily correctable, not by trying to just wave a wand and make the officials better with more training, because they already get tons of training. It's better just the more eyes you have on it. The knowledge of the whole is greater than the knowledge of the few. I've always believed that. And again, if you can do it when you're watching TV yourself, sitting on your couch, then a trained referee can do it even better and more quickly, and especially if given more access to replay angles and things that we don't even get at home. I mean, how many times when you're watching a game at home is there really any doubt as to what happened after about 30 seconds have passed, which is not a long time and isn't a delay of the game. But when you're just sitting at home and you're watching and they go to those replays, within 20 to 30 seconds, you can usually definitively say, oh yeah, that's what happened. So if we can say it, we shouldn't have to sit there and know that they're messing it up in real time when then we can just fix it in real time. So I'm not going to get too hung up on this. Email me if you want to. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. On Twitter, you can get me at BobbyGameDay. Got an email from Mark over in, he's in Palm Harbor. And Mark, and I know Joe got a ton of questions about this too. You know, the other day, the whole Melvin Gordon thing, I don't want to say the whole Melvin Gordon thing like something happened, but news broke that Melvin Gordon looking for a better contract from the Chargers, looking like, hey, could they let him get away possibly? Could they maybe, you know, say, hey, we're not going to do it, and they move him? And again, Joe put up an article on it. It was earlier today, I believe. I'm doing this on Friday morning, and it was the Melvin Gordon angle. So, hey, can the Bucs get him? You know, maybe we can move in there. That solves our running back issues. I'll say again, a few things. First of all, I think they've made their minds up. They're going to pursue the idea that Peyton Barber and Ronald Jones can actually be good, and that those are going to be the running backs like the ones we already have, and that with different things being done better than last year, those two guys can be more effective, particularly Jones, who, of course, didn't get much of a chance last year for whatever reasons, his own fault or otherwise. And the chances he did get, he was met with the crown of a helmet under his chin strap like 75% of the time or something like that because of our offensive line. So they're hoping that's better this year. So I don't think they're looking, I'm not saying they don't want Melvin Gordon, but second of all, I don't think the Chargers are going to allow this to happen. I mean, they, and you know, if you've heard me before, I'm always saying, oh, running back, whatever, just get somebody off the street, it'll be fine. I've never said, like, it doesn't matter, like, running back doesn't matter. I just mean, when I say that, there are a lot of different ways to skin the cat when it comes to running back. Whereas quarterback, you know, you have to draft your quarterback high, he needs to be a guy, this is the guy, you know. With running back, sometimes you get them in the first round and they're awesome. Sometimes you get them off the street and they're awesome. Sometimes you draft them in the seventh round and they're awesome, whatever it is, you know. They come from all different ways of being acquired. And if you look at the Patriots over the years, same thing. I mean, they've been dominant now for almost 20 years. They've always had, it seems, every couple of years, somebody different at running back. And they've had guys they've drafted high. They've had guys they've drafted low. They've had guys that didn't draft at all. They've had guys nobody else wanted. They've had guys everybody else wanted. You know, it just depends. I'm not comparing the Bucs to the Patriots. I'm just saying running backs matter. But in any given year, you can have your stud running back come to you in a number of ways, including he already played for us, only now he's just better. And that part, that latter part there is what the Bucs are banking on. But the third thing with Melvin Gordon, too, is let's say the Bucs did want to do it. And let's say the Chargers were willing to part ways. You know, our cap situation being what it is, and this goes back to Jason Pierre-Paul, there's been a lot of talk, hey, let's just cut JPP. Let's save that $7 million and maybe more, depending on the vagaries of the whole thing with his injury and how much they're, you know, they're at least on the hook for half of it, according to what we think we know, but there could be differences in the $14 million and exactly how much is cap dead and how much is it not. So you could cut him. You know, like I said earlier on the show, Ryan Smith, a couple of million there if they ended up with this drug suspension, just saying, all right, you know what, we're out. It seems very unlikely to me. The Bucs are going with Peyton Barber. They're going, and there might be somebody cut during training camp that they also get, but Ronald Jones, Peyton Barber are going to get the first two cracks at this, and they're hoping the offensive line is better, and that's that. And I think we're all hoping the offensive line is better too, as well as many other things. So thanks for the email there, Mark, in Palm Harbor. I appreciate it. If you want to, again, get a hold of me, BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. On Twitter, you can get me at BobbyGameDay. And I will wrap things up with an email I got. This one's from Jim, who emailed me regarding a couple weeks ago on the show. I think it was the Vikings we talked about who made a rule for training camp this year that nobody over 18 is allowed to get in line for autographs. It'll be limited to 18 and under only. And I talked about how that was a good thing, and I went on about a whole thing about adults asking for autographs and how once you hit a certain age, you shouldn't be asking for autographs anyway. Same thing with bringing a glove to a baseball game. Did a whole thing on the show a couple weeks ago. Go back to the last podcast if you want to hear that part. But anyway, I got an email from Jim. He says, Bobby, I listen to your podcast each week on JoeBucksFan.com. I've never felt compelled to send you an email until now. I usually look forward to your shows, even though sometimes I do disagree. He said, I've collected autographs and authentic sports memorabilia for a large portion of my life, and I recently turned 54. I became a Bucks fan in 1984 when I got stationed at MacDill Air Force Base. Thank you for your service, Jim. I still have a ticket for my first Bucks game that happened on December 16, 1984. There you see the ticket stubs. So we got that in common, Jim. And I'll bet you'd treasure that ticket stub. And you wouldn't if you'd scanned a cell phone all that time ago. But anyway, I digress. He says, I keep that stub with all my other Buccaneer memorabilia, including autographs that I've attained in person. He goes on, I have always enjoyed getting autographs from current and former players simply because I love the interaction with them, the stories that they have to tell about their playing days, especially the former players who get no coverage or interest from newer fans or the media. I have always looked at how I go about adding to my collection as a hobby and nothing more. He says, your dismissal of adults wanting to get an autograph from an athlete as absurd without any logic or reason behind it makes no sense. I agree with the Vikings' decision to limit the age group because there are adults who only go to events like training camp to get multiple autographs to sell on eBay. I and many others are not part of that minority. He says, I hope I've shed some light on this subject and look forward to hearing back from you. Have a great weekend, and as always, go Bucks, Jim. Jim, thank you for the email. Now, I will say this much. Sometimes I get a little carried away on something, and I can be dismissive of it on the whole when there's more nuance to it than I want to maybe give it credit for. Autographs are not my thing. In general, yeah, I do feel as if they should be kept more to younger kids, or adults getting them for their younger kids is another exception. In your case, what you mentioned, and I'm sure there are a lot of people out there like this where it's legitimately a hobby, not really a hobby, I shouldn't say, that's something you do, a collector type thing, something that you collect. Like you said, you enjoy the interaction with the players. It's probably a little bit weird to try and interact with a player just at random and maybe an autograph. I'm spitballing here. Maybe asking for an autograph is kind of an icebreaker type thing. It's kind of like the way in college, you know, I'm not a big drinker. I don't really drink alcohol, and I think beer tastes like swill. Can't stand the stuff. And so, I know some people out there right now are like, oh, is this guy serious? But beer really does taste terrible. So anyway, point is, like, in college, still, you're at a party, you need something in your hand, right? Like, it's weird to go up to somebody with both hands unoccupied and just kind of start talking to them. But if you have something in your hand, you can do that. And this is before the whole bottled water craze and everything, or I would have done that probably. So a lot of times I would just get one beer, because even though it tastes terrible, it doesn't taste as bad as liquor and things like that. And I'd have the beer in my hand. And even though I wasn't a big beer guy, now it's like, okay, I can, you know, I got a beer in my hand. I don't know, it's something to do with your hands, right? So maybe having an autograph type, you know, hey, can I have your autograph? Oh, by the way. And then you start talking to him. I get that. So I will say that, Jim. I apologize if I was too dismissive. And I'm not the type of person that just says things and then once somebody calls me on it, I apologize. I only apologize if I feel like the person made a convincing case of why I might have missed something. And in this case, I think Jim might have. I'll give him that much. Again, it's not something I would do. Like, I would still admittedly feel a little weird at age 39 asking for another guy's autograph. And maybe part of that is, too, because I work in the media. Or I don't really work in the media now, but I have before. So, you know, it's kind of commonplace to be in locker rooms and things like that. But I can see Jim's point. I wanted to get this email on the air. So, Jim, thank you for the email, and you're absolutely right about the ticket stub. I bet you that's a hell of a thing to have that first one from 1984. And thank you for listening above all else, and I appreciate it. I'll always get back to you guys when you email me, and sometimes I'll read them on the air, especially if it's pertinent to what we've been talking about like that was. So, with all that said, we got 2 weeks to go, folks. We're going to go ahead and settle down for now. I want you to have a great weekend. We're off the holiday. It's just a regular old two-day weekend. There is Canadian football. I don't know if any's on TV. I've been watching a little bit of that, though, when they have had it on TV. But in the meantime, of course, the All-Star break's over. There's baseball, the Open Championship, Royal Portrush is next week. We'll talk about that more maybe on next week's show and everything else. But until then, just start getting things in order. I mean, that's what I'm doing right now. I have a list of things I've been wanting to do over the summer, and I want them all done, at least before the first regular season game, but even probably before the preseason. So we got 2 weeks till camp. Then we got another week and a half till the first game, and it'll just kind of go from there. Get your things in order. If you have drywall that needs replacing, or patch, do that. If you got to do something in the backyard, some sort of project, you got to pressure wash your porch, whatever, do that. Get everything done. It really is like almost like dying, right? Football season, like you want to get your affairs in order so that you don't have to worry about any of it once the season begins. So let's work on all that and have fun this weekend. Above all else, be safe. I'll be back next week, and when I am, we'll have either 8 or 7 days until training camp. But in the meantime, thanks to Jim, thanks to Mark for their emails, thanks to all of you for listening, thanks to the Joes for letting me have this forum to be able to get in front of all you Bucks fans. Thanks to Bill Curry for it. I am Bobby Fenton. That is the free stretch for the final or second to final week of the offseason. I'll be back next week. And until then, have a great weekend. And wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.